This is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. With the nation now focused on Flint's water crisis, fresh attention is centering on a critical part of this story, the fact that the city spent years under the control of a series of state-appointed emergency managers. It was an emergency manager who decided to switch to using Flint River water. It was an EM who last March flatly rejected Flint City Council's 7-1 vote to reconnect to Detroit's water, calling the vote, quote, incomprehensible, and insisting the water was safe and met legal standards. To trace the origin of EMs in Michigan, we need to go back in time a few decades. And to help us do that, we welcome Eric Scorsone, Michigan State University economist and the founding director of the MSU Extension Center for Local Government Finance and Policy. Welcome back to the program, Eric.
Good to be here.
So this law that we have right now, officially known as the Local Financial Stability and Choice Act, this isn't the first EM law in Michigan, is it?
No, this is the third iteration. We had the first iteration, Public Act 72 of 1990. That was in effect for about 20 years. Wasn't really used very much, maybe a couple times. Public Act 4 of 2011 was passed. One of the first things Governor Snyder did, much beefed up emergency manager law. The referendum actually rejected that law in 2012 by the voters, and then we have now PA 436 in effect for the last couple of years.
Right. And it's worth noting that we have seen the power of appointing a state emergency manager used by both Republican and Democratic governors, haven't we?
Yeah, it goes back to Engler, Granholm, Snyder. So we've had it for several governors now, absolutely.
How does Michigan's Constitution frame the power of local government? I think that needs to be understood in order to understand this law.
Sure. I mean, the Michigan Constitution talks about the ability of local governments, particularly cities, to have home rule, essentially the ability to decide some of their own affairs subject to state and federal constraints. And we have some laws around home rule and so forth. But actually, the reality is there's a lot of limitations that the courts have decided over time. Local governments have a lot of restrictions on their sovereignty. And states have typically intervened in local financial affairs going back to almost 200 years now. There's a lot of precedence for some degree of state oversight, at least, of local finances.
And I guess I want to make sure that I'm clear. Local government, according to our Constitution in Michigan, it's a branch of the state government, so it's not autonomous.
Correct. It's typically termed the creature of the state government, and the state creates it through the Constitution, through statute. And so the state has a lot of control. And then there's U.S. Supreme Court cases that have said this as well. So it's pretty well set precedence.
Would it be fair, Eric, to say the concept of appointing an emergency manager, is it kind of like a parent who has to take away privileges to correct a child who's getting in trouble?
I think that is the premise of the law. Yeah, the premise is definitely that local governments, for whatever number of reasons, have been unable to address their issues. And so the financial emergency exists because of that. And therefore, the state must step in because the state has either the expertise or ability that's not existent in that local government at that time.
As we've seen, particularly playing out with the imposition of an emergency manager in Detroit, there are criteria that have to be met and steps that happen before this final step of an emergency manager is taken.
Absolutely. There's an entire review process that the state treasury has to go through. It's actually several different phases. It takes several months in some cases to complete all this activity. There are certain triggers that have to be met, findings of fact. And so it's an extensive process to ensure that there is a financial crisis. The state must intervene, and the local government can appeal a finding of an emergency in some cases as well.
Eric, how many other states have some form of an emergency manager law?
About 20 states have a formal kind of law that has some kind of receiver-type powers involved. Mostly it's Northeast, Midwest states, maybe a couple West Coast states. Other states have probably implicit powers around something of this nature, but some of them just have never had these problems, so they don't have a specific law for it necessarily.
And how does what we've got today, our Local Financial Stability and Choice Act, PA 436, how does that compare to other states?
Well, in terms of the emergency manager provisions, that's pretty aggressive. Very few states give the kind of authority and power that we do. So I'd say it does stick out to an extent, which is why it's probably gotten so much attention around the country. It's seen as, you know, a very aggressive approach to local financial emergencies. Obviously, there is a choice aspect now. The local government does have sort of four options to choose from. And so that is a newer aspect of our law that I don't think you see in other states as well.
Spell out those options just so we're all really clear.
There's four options. Consent agreement, which keeps local officials in charge under certain constraints, which is like Wayne County had. Mm-hmm. You have a neutral evaluation, which is kind of a pre-bankruptcy process, bankruptcy directly, and then emergency manager. And so, for example, the city of Hamtramck actually chose to have an emergency manager as part of their approach to their problems.
I'm speaking with Michigan State University economist Eric Scorsone, who's a leading expert in city and state government finance issues, as we explore Michigan's emergency manager law, which has been a major, major part of the Flint water story. Eric, there have been many critics who've compared the appointment of emergency manager to a coup, if you will, ripping power away from locally elected authorities. Is there merit to this view, or are they getting it wrong?
Well, I would say the law pretty much does express this, that basically the emergency manager is taking power away from those local officials. So I don't think you can deny that happens. The question of whether that's needed to happen is another issue, but it does remove local officials from control because the identification of the problem is essentially that local officials have been unable to address the problems of that local community. So that is a correct critique, well, at least an assumption of how the law works, absolutely.
And certainly there have been many critics pointing out the clear fact that this power is being wielded in cities and school districts that are predominantly Black. Do you believe the state has overreached in some of these communities and school districts?
Well, I think that, yeah, I mean, that's clear. There is a strong correlation between the racial makeup and where emergency managers are, and there may be many reasons for that. I do think, particularly with school districts, we have seen the policy not work very well. I think Detroit Public Schools is a great example where you'd have to say that the success really is not there. And I think that's because of the way the financial system of schools is structured in Michigan. It's just simply too many big problems there that emergency managers can't address. They don't change state law. They don't fix the economy of a local community. So I think there's some real limitations in some ways.
Now, under Michigan law, what kind of liability does an emergency manager assume with regards to the results or the outcomes of his or her decisions? And is it the same as in other states?
Well, I'm not sure about other states, but yeah, the law is pretty clear that the emergency manager is acting in a way that does provide some governmental immunity. The emergency manager, if there's a claim against them, has to be defended by the attorney general. That was fairly new to these new emergency manager laws. The city actually has to pay the legal bills of what the attorney general incurs. And it's certainly true that there is a degree of immunity provided to that emergency manager. And I suppose the rationale would be that, you know, they want some kind of protection because they're making these difficult decisions. But I think this issue is going to be tested in the Flint case to see how that really plays out.
Now, we can't talk about the existing emergency manager law without touching back to what you referenced earlier, the fact that voters in Michigan flatly rejected the previous law, and then the Republican-controlled legislature went right around, passed another one, and then stuck a piddly little million-dollar appropriation to it to keep voters from overturning it. Isn't that state lawmakers basically thumbing their collective noses at the voters of Michigan who said, we don't want this?
Yeah, I can see how it could be seen that way, absolutely. I think the thought behind it was we need some policy. We had a lot of financial distress. And so the idea, I think, was to give these communities a choice of which of the options they wanted to use. That maybe was felt to be different than the Public Act 4 that was rejected. I can understand the critique of that. I mean, it is what was passed. And I would say that, you know, the choice is a little bit constrained, to be truthful about it. If you really carefully read PA 436, what you actually find is a local government can choose consent agreement, for example, but actually the state treasurer has to agree that that is the right approach. If they don't agree, they can force them to go back to one of the other options. So it is a choice, but perhaps a very constrained choice.
And kind of harkening back to what you said about this is one of the more aggressive laws in the country then.
It is, and I think proponents of the law would argue that was because the financial crises were so severe that we had to move forward in a very strong manner. Yeah, I mean, that's clearly the approach we have used.
Eric, there's been so much national news coverage, many editorials and blog postings all about the Flint water crisis and the emergency manager law in Michigan. What are you hearing that really jumped out at you as, oh, they got it wrong?
Well, I would say there was probably a lot of things that have gotten wrong. I think there's been maybe some clarifications over time, kind of what are these emergency managers, what do they do? That part of this discussion, I think, is only still coming forward to some extent. I think there needs to be some discussion of, you know, whatever successes emergency managers may have had in the past, I think that may be very true. But clearly in this case, there probably needs to be some examination of how things were steered in the wrong direction.
Peeling back the layers of this Flint water crisis, just like an onion. And then in the same time, we've got this mounting crisis in the Detroit public schools. What has all of this said to you about flaws that have been exposed in Michigan's emergency manager law? What do you see?
Well, I think the biggest flaw is that, you know, the theory is the state can do it better, right? The state can take over the local government and run it better and provide the expertise. And that clearly didn't work in the Flint case. You know, the situation is epically wrong, perhaps. But, I mean, this is clearly a case where we have to ask the question, why did it go wrong? And I think it's a complex answer. But one of the things I think that needs to be done, and quite frankly, it's not just for emergency managers, cities or school districts. We need a better relationship between state and local government. I would actually think about like a Department of Community Affairs that really promotes and looks at the overall welfare of a community, because, you know, where you put this in state government matters. If it's in Treasury, it's going to focus on financial matters. Mm-hmm. And I think if you look at a state like Pennsylvania that has a similar kind of process, they put it in the Department of Community Development. And what happens is they look at it more holistically. They look at, okay, financial decisions, yes, but then what about quality of life? What about infrastructure? What about economic development? Because they recognize, you know, EM per se or a receiver can only fix so many parts of that puzzle. And so I think we need to think about it a little more holistically in Michigan.
Is there any argument to be made for repealing the EM law outright, or do we just need to make changes in it?
Well, I'm not sure about that. I would say we need a law to address financial emergencies, of course, and maybe we need to debate what that needs to look like going forward. I think we at least need to recognize that we need some reforms around our entire public finance system, because Flint is in this crisis at least partially because of state laws that put it there, that make it difficult for cities to operate financially. So we need to ask questions about, you know, sort of preventative medicine. We've had so many of these problems around the state. I think we need to start asking why. Why are we have so many more than other states? And can we start addressing these issues more holistically?
So I think I'm hearing, as much as we want to focus on the bottom line and financially rescuing or financially helping cities that are going broke, don't forget the people.
Exactly. I mean, the EM law actually says that this is happening to protect the public health, safety, and welfare of the population, because essentially a financial crisis threatens basic public services. You know, you can say, well, that's why we're doing this. And in fact, in this case, obviously, we didn't do that. We unfortunately have had a tragic set of circumstances leading to not protecting the public health. And so I think we have to ask the question, maybe the premise of the law needs to be reconsidered then.
Eric Scorsone, Michigan State University economist and the founding director of the MSU Extension Center for Local Government Finance and Policy. Eric, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.